Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Well, good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta, and glad to be with you. Got some interesting things coming up with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. A new slate of cardinals here. The Pope creating 13 new cardinals, including Archbishop Wilton Gregory of Washington, D.C. We'll have more to say about that in just a little while. But it'll be good to get familiar with some of these men who I'm sure you are no more familiar with than I am. I'm looking at one of these guys, and the diocese that he serves has only three priests. And, there's nothing wrong with being small. But you really wonder what qualities he has, what experience he has that would equip him to be an advisor to the Holy Father. We're going to go over each of these men with Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who's been trying to get profiles on all of them. So that's coming up. Also, we're going to hear a story of coming into full communion with the Catholic Church. It's one of these reversion stories, you might say. Becky Carter, raised in a Catholic home, didn't take the faith seriously, ended up in love with a non-Catholic and left the church to marry. It was no big deal at the time. She didn't feel like she was missing much. But as the marriage went on, Becky and her husband began searching for a church because they wanted a coherent approach to life they could share with children. And her husband's study eventually led them both to the Catholic Church, in which she had been baptized. So Becky will be joining us a little later in this hour. But first, we'll get today's headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Wednesday, October 28th. It's the Feast of St. Simon and Jude. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. The Justice Department is charging 8 alleged Chinese agents over covert operations within U.S. borders.
China describes Fox Hunt as an international anti-corruption campaign in which it seeks to locate legitimate fugitives around the world to bring them back for trial in China.
Assistant Attorney General John Demeer is telling reporters that 5 of the suspects were arrested in the U.S. and 3 were thought to be in China. FBI Director Chris Wray called China's actions within U.S. borders outrageous and unacceptable. He accused Beijing of regularly violating international rules and norms. Federal agents say 60 people have been indicted in a staggering elder fraud case involving fake magazine subscriptions. U.S. Attorney Erica McDonald reads a transcript of one message left on an answering machine of a victim.
If you don't want to make a payment or settle this, we're going to pursue with legal action for the full $1,100 value of your account. So you're going to receive magazines probably until the day you die. I hope that's what you want. Have a great day.
She says call centers would make these threatening phone calls to victims to get them to make repeat payments on an existing subscription or one lump sum payment to cancel. But the magazines would never arrive. And McDonald says the scammers stole more than $300 million from 150,000 victims across 14 different states. Wall Street taking a tumble today. Investors likely worried about the recent rise in COVID cases as the U.S. has averaged 71,000 new cases a day over the past week. Stocks tumbling again today as the Dow Jones Industrial Average suffered its third straight triple-digit drop. The Dow Jones, S&P 500, and NASDAQ all went down over 3%. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio News.
All right. I'm Al Cresta. And we are looking at the new cardinals that Pope Francis is announcing. And, don't feel bad if you don't recognize many of these names or any of these names. These are not people you would normally be familiar with because they're from foreign lands. Now, we have one U.S. Archbishop here, Wilton Gregory, who's being made a cardinal, which is what they often do with the man who is the ordinary of the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C., Cardinal Wuerl, resigned back in late 2018, I think it was. We're going to talk about these men and try to get a little bit of a feel for what is going on here. Who are they? Is there anything about the chemistry between them, or where they're selected from, or what skills, experience they might have, that tells us a little bit more about Pope Francis's vision for his, the guys he wants to be in the huddle with. These are his advisors. And to help us do this, Dr. Matthew Bunsen joins us. You know Matthew well. He's with us regularly here on Crest in the Afternoon. And he is the executive editor and Washington bureau chief for EWTN News, a senior fellow at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology, the author of the first English language biography of Pope Francis, and also the Encyclopedia of Catholic History. And Matthew, good to have you here.
Oh, always good to be with you.
Well, I wanted to go over some of these names and see what you can tell us about them. 13 new cardinals. I guess the first question is, do they have to go to Rome for any special ceremony? Because COVID's going to keep a lot of these guys away.
Well, that's technically no. It's not unheard of. For example, a perfect example of this would be that Angelo Roncalli actually received the biglietto, which is the official document, and the red hat from the Premier of France
wow.
when he was appointed. So okay. It's not unheard of. There are certainly many options that can be employed here because of the COVID issues. Now, it does raise some very intriguing questions that we don't want to get into in great detail about what would happen in the event of the need for a conclave and how all of that would play out. But for a consistory, really, it's the formal decree by the Holy Father, the reception of the biglietto. I think also of the great historical example of Bonaventure, who was given his red hat when the cardinals arrived to give it to him. Back then, it was the actual Galero, so it was a huge red hat. He was washing dishes in the Franciscan house, and he asked him to hang it on the tree until he could wash his hands. So, yes, there are provisions that can be employed for the distribution of the red hats.
Is there anything, I'm going to want to talk about the individuals, but in your scanning
yeah.
of the cardinals, the new cardinals, do you see any message, any pattern to the tea leaves?
I think there are a couple of things. The overarching one is that once again, as we have seen with previous consistories under Francis, this is a very personal set of choices. And so many of these are individuals, and we'll go through the list, but these are people that he knows, people that he has encountered, people who he trusts. And then we can add to that, as he has also done throughout his pontificate, he's chosen people from the peripheries. He's chosen people, for example, Cardinal Alex Sim from Brunei,
yeah.
Who is leader of a very tiny Catholic population.
I think only three priests there,
very
right?
Strategic. It's very, very small.
Yeah.
And so his appointment then is really more of a message in a similar way. His appointment of Cardinal Zanari, who's the nuncio to Syria a couple of consistories ago, was also sending a message that the Holy Father is very concerned about what is happening in Syria. And we can see again that with some exceptions, Wilton Gregory being one of them, cardinals are not chosen, particularly in this pontificate, from the traditional cardinalatial sees. And that's become a hallmark of this pontificate.
So no one from Philadelphia, no one from Detroit, no one from Los Angeles. And that's gone on for a while.
It has. We have no one from Paris, for example. I was surprised, but personally disappointed that the Archbishop Michel Aupetit was not given a red hat. Pope didn't ask me my opinion.
Right.
But the reason I was slightly disappointed was because he has been such a strong figure in France on bioethics, but also giving the kind of leadership that he has in the wake of the Notre Dame fire and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big omission, I think, in this one again, is Archbishop Jose Gomez
yep.
of Los Angeles.
I mean, I know I always like to distinguish between what we know, what we suspect, what we guess at, and what we wish. So in this case, do you know why somebody like Archbishop Gomez would be passed over?
I don't. Beyond the things that I've mentioned, that this tends to be very personal with Francis, that he chooses people that he's either comfortable with or that in the appointment he's trying to send a message or to make a key point. In the case of Archbishop Gregory, he has certainly been someone whose name has surfaced for many years as a possible recipient of the Red Hat.
I remember
going back in 2008, and this is, of course, under Pope Benedict, that a rather misinformed pundit on one of the cable networks actually suggested that Pope Benedict would appoint Wilton Gregory as to the College of Cardinals as a gift or an homage to Barack Obama. And I mention that simply because it is so very difficult to assess some of these picks and many of the motivation. But it does drive home the fact that in his time as the Archbishop of Atlanta, some 14 years before he was moved to Washington, D.C., Wilton Gregory's name surfaced a number of times as a possible recipient of the Red Hat.
Right.
So I can't say that it's a huge shock, especially given the phenomenal growth that surrounded his tenure in Atlanta.
Right.
And now, as the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., he's given the very difficult task of being in the nation's capital at a very difficult time, and a figure of reconciliation, but also trying to be a figure of rebuilding shattered trust as a result of some of the actions of his predecessors, in particular Theodore McCarrick.
Somebody has suggested that getting the Red Hat is a reward for his dressing down President Trump. Do you think there's anything to that?
I personally don't think so, for the simple reason that the Vatican, and certainly this Holy Father, doesn't tend to make cheap political points.
Right.
Now, some might disagree with that, but I think in this case, it's giving the Red Hat to someone of long career, which he has. I think, again, somebody who's been given the task of trying to bring healing and reconciliation. But also somebody who is the Archbishop in the nation's capital and of the world's greatest superpower.
Right, right. Well, let's go through some of these names that we're unfamiliar with. Bishop Mario Grech.
Well, he's the General Secretary of the Synod of Bishops, and he's from Malta. He was one of two bishops from Malta. He earned a bit of notoriety a few years back with Charles Shakruna, the Archbishop from Malta, who his name had surfaced a number of times as a possible recipient of the Red Hat. In this case, Bishop Mario Grech was a signatory of sort of an interpretation of Amoris Laetitia that did raise a number of eyebrows a few years back.
Yeah, that, if I remember then, correctly, that was about the most, my memory's correct, and you can correct me on this, but it was about one of the most liberal or generous, however you want to look at this, interpretations of Amoris Laetitia in terms of letting Catholic couples, divorced, remarried, return to the Eucharist.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah.
So he was then appointed in October of 2019 Pro Secretary General of the Synod of Bishops as a successor to Cardinal Lorenzo Baldessari, who has actually just turned 80, and then he took over as the General Secretary. This is a statement of not just trust in Mario Grech, but this is also, once again, Francis pointing to the institutions that he sees that are most paramount, most significant in his pontificate. In this case, the Synod of Bishops, as we have seen, and we have coming up, of course, a Synod on Synodality in a couple of years.
Right.
So as General Secretary, Cardinal-elect Grech is going to have a very prominent role in the future of that.
Okay. Bishop Marcello Semeraro.
Well, he's now the prefect for the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. He is the direct successor to Cardinal Angelo Becciu, who, of course, has now one of the most stunning falls from grace in recent memory, certainly on the Rome side. And
this financial
primary,
right?
Yes, exactly. So we have accusations of financial improprieties. The accusation, which has been strongly denied by Cardinal Becciu, relating to the sending of perhaps 700,000 euro to Australia, perhaps to meddle in the investigation and trial of George Pell. Again, that has been denied vigorously by Cardinal Becciu, but it gives you an idea of sort of the problems that surround Cardinal Becciu. Yeah. In the case of Cardinal Semeraro, he's an Italian, studied in Rome, and is probably best known prior to this appointment as the secretary for the Council of Cardinals. He's held that post from 2013, and that was a real position of trust. So he was that Council of Cardinals, a so-called C9, then it dropped to C8, C7, is similar to the Synod of Bishops. One of those entities that Francis really trusts and has staked a great deal of his pontificate in bringing the type of reform to the Roman Curia that Francis envisions.
Mm. Okay. Can you stay with me a little longer, Matthew?
Absolutely.
I want to be able to get through more of these names. And so what we'll do is we'll go into the next segment and go over some of these names. Also want to mention that Father Cantalamessa is named. He's one of the cardinals that many of us know from his time as the papal preacher going back to 1980. Also, his association with the Franciscan University of Steubenville. So we'll talk a little bit about Father Cantalamessa. And there are some names here that we'll get to know. My guest, Dr. Matthew Bunsen. I'm Al Cresta.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Religious freedom and health care and the right to life are under the greatest attack in American history. Right now, Catholic healthcare and the pro-life movement hang in the balance. My name is Lewis Brown, Executive Director of the Christ Medicus Foundation, and we are leading a new movement to defend religious freedom and civil rights in healthcare and to build the culture of life. We need your help now more than ever. Join this movement. Go to religiousfreedomandhealthcare.org. That's religiousfreedomandhealthcare.org.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, it is All Saints Day in the Western Lung of the Church. The East observes this on a different date. Whether from the East or the West, a saint is a saint.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
You can't imagine life without your faith, and Henry Ford Village wouldn't have it any other way. Residents can tune in to live televised services from our very own chapel every Sunday and online devotionals every day, making sure you stay connected, energized, and feeling good through faith the whole week through. Connection. That's what it means to be part of a faith-based community, always bringing each other closer to one another and closer to God. Let us show you what it's like. Schedule your virtual walkthrough at henryfordvillage.com today.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. In elections, it is not the candidate who is right on the issues who necessarily wins, nor even the candidate with whom most people agree, nor is it the candidate with the most money, nor the one who is ahead in the polls. Rather, the candidate wins who has the higher number of people actually cast their vote. That's why between now and Election Day, it's crucial for each of us to focus on mobilizing more and more votes, on getting people to vote early, and on actually going door to door with election literature. Organize youth groups and other efforts to go throughout your neighborhood with a pro-life message about the importance of the election. Remember, the pro-abortion forces are doing this. We must not fail to do it ourselves. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Is it time to refresh your office or workspace? Office Express believes in supporting the people who bring your business to life and in helping you efficiently reach your goals. They do this by providing creative workplace solutions and tools. They're everything office, including office supplies, furniture, and printed products. Stop by their state-of-the-art furniture showroom or call 877-795-2600 to begin your journey to a more efficient business. This message is sponsored by Office Express OEX, a proud supporter of local Catholic charities.
Be a blessing to your neighbors in need through your gift to Catholic Charities of Southeast Michigan. Together we can change the faces of despair, loneliness, hunger, and addiction, one blessing at a time. As the charitable arm for the corporal works of mercy throughout the Archdiocese of Detroit, Catholic Charities exists to provide the services that make a difference in the lives of over 20,000 people each and every year in Southeast Michigan. So how would you like to bless your neighbor today? Visit ccsem.org/donate to choose your involvement.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta, and with me is Dr. Matthew Bunsen as we canvass the 13 new cardinals announced by Pope Francis, and they will... It's supposed to be the consistory, where there's kind of the official elevation to the College of Cardinals, is slated for November 28th. By the way, this will be the seventh of Francis' pontificate. And we don't yet know how many of these cardinals will be able to make it there November 28th, but they are cardinals nonetheless. We were describing some of them. Let's go to Rwanda, which was the scene of one of the most devastating massacres in recent history, and made even more poignant because of heavy Catholic influence in the country. Francis has chosen to elevate Archbishop Antoine Kambanda, 62 years old. What do we know about him, other than that he's from that strife-torn area, Rwanda?
Well, his story, I think, is one of the most poignant of all of the cardinals here, because he is, as you know, the Archbishop of Kigali in Rwanda.
Right.
He was actually ordained a priest in 1990 by John Paul II during his visit to Rwanda. But what makes this story especially remarkable is that all of the members of his family were killed during the terrible events, the genocide and the civil strife in Rwanda in 1994, except saving only one brother, who actually now lives in Italy. So he has seen firsthand the destruction and the death in his country, and I think that brings a very important and powerful experience, a sensibility to this, a sensitivity to what the country has gone through and what it needs in order to be put itself back together again and to really keep going forward as a country. And in much the same way that I think we do also have to note, just to jump back very briefly, to Wilton Gregory as the first African-American cardinal. I think that in itself is of immense historical significance.
Yeah, no, very good. Anybody from South America, where Pope Francis has lived for so long?
Well, yes, one in particular, and that is Archbishop Celestino Asbrazo, who's a Capuchin Franciscan. He's the Archbishop of Santiago, Chile. He is the successor, if you'll remember, to the rather disgraced Cardinal Ricardo Ezzati Andrello, who... his resignation was accepted when he turned 75. In this case, Cardinal Aus inherits and did inherit an absolute disaster in Chile, where, if you remember, almost the entire episcopate
tendered
resignation to the Pope. You had the Karadima scandal. You had the Bishop Barros scandal. So he has had a very tough road.
Oh, and you have Pope Francis himself defending for a while. Defending one of the abusers. So
that's right. Also, I know that many listeners in your audience are probably familiar with him also, because he raised those eyebrows again when there was a brief time where there was a controversy in whether or not he would grant or give communion to people who were kneeling. And that became something of a brief controversy during one of the masses there.
I didn't realize this was this guy, that guy. What do you recall why he would do that? Was it slowing down communion lines in such a way, you know what I'm saying, that there was public disorder?
Yes, right.
I mean, I can understand can't understand it just as a matter of, I don't like it, so I'm not going to serve you communion.
Well, he gave an interview afterward, and he was saying that that communion is simply not a union with God, but with the community. Mm. And so I think his argument was that, as he said, if I go to a place where everyone receives communion on their knees, I do so too.
Yeah.
But he gave something of an apology for this.
Yeah.
But it certainly raised the hackles of a lot of people.
Yeah. So much for unity and diversity here, huh? Or diversity and unity. All right. How about Asia? How's Asia making out on this this consistory?
Well, notably, we had the movement from Manila of Cardinal Luis Tagle to Rome to take over the massive Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples, the so-called Red Pope. It's sort of in his place. Pope Francis appointed the Archbishop of Capiz in the Philippines, Jose Fuerte Azigcula, who actually has studied philosophy and theology at Santo Tomas in Manila. He's known for his pastoral care, which I know was one of the hallmarks also of one of the many things that Pope Francis focuses on. So he's basically a figure that's not really very well known outside of the Philippines. I suspect that Cardinal Tagle's influence may have weighed in a little bit here in terms of that. But it's also recognition just of the sheer size of the Philippine Catholic Church.
Yeah. The second largest in the world?
Yes, I think it is. So we go from this enormous Catholic population to what is considered, at least by Vatican standards, still to be Asia, which is Brunei and Bishop Cornelius Sim, who is, as we noted in the last segment, he has about 21,000 Catholics there. Ironically, most of them Filipinos who are working in Brunei, as many Filipinos do in the Middle East and Saudi Arabia and elsewhere. He has three parishes. He has a grand total of four priests in the vicariate of Brunei. He counts himself as one because he is basically a pastor. This is one of those message appointments from Francis that where the church is small.
I need to move on. Give me one more that you think is especially significant for us to understand.
Well, as you noted, Raniero Cantalamessa, the preacher of the papal household, that's a great honor. This is a man who has preached for 40 years across multiple pontificates.
He's wonderful.
I always pay very close attention to what he does. The other one would be Archbishop Silvano Tomasi, who is one of the four of the retired or over age. Nine of the 13 are electors, which means that we're now actually at 128 electors. That could be notable. But Silvano Tomasi was the former apostolic nuncio and permanent observer to the United Nations in Geneva, and was a major figure for a very long time as the voice of the Holy See, not just as a nuncio, but then as this figure from the time of John Paul II through Benedict and into Pope Francis. So this is a very long time career figure, but also somebody who was really a great voice for this.
All right. Well, we'll be continuing to watch and learn more. And I hope Ed Penton decides to include some of these in the next edition of his book.
I suspect he will.
On the next pope. So, Matthew, thanks for taking the time. Always great talking with you. And it's wonderful to know that, again, we are so aware of what's going on with these appointments. Thank you.
A joy is always to be with you. God bless.
Let's switch gears now. Many of these cardinals are, of course, men who were raised Catholic, had probably long careers in the Catholic Church, long ministries in the Catholic Church. But there are some of us who didn't stay in the Catholic Church and went off and did things our way for quite a long time. I'm one of them, so I get to say that. My guest, Becky Carter, was raised Catholic. Didn't take the faith too seriously as she was younger, but ended up falling in love with a non-Catholic and left the church. And really her story is about coming back, and it's got a wonderful twist to it. Becky is co-host of Thriving in the Trenches podcast. She's a mother to five strong-willed children, and she and her family returned to the Catholic Church after running away from it for 17 years. And rediscovering the church has made her a fierce defender of the church, the gift that she has of the church. Becky, great to have you here. Thank you.
Hi, Al. Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your family and, you know, what it was like growing up Catholic in your home.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in South Louisiana, where it's pretty culturally Catholic down there.
Okay.
Everyone, you know, it was just, everybody was Catholic. I really didn't know much of a difference, you know, just an example of taking the faith for granted. But it was just my parents and myself and one brother, and we were just a normal family. Went to church every Sunday, visited, you know, the sacrament,
mm-hmm.
and but you know, in back in the 70s and 80s, it really was a hard time for catechesis.
Absolutely.
I can say, even though I went to Catholic schools from kindergarten till 12th grade, I know that there was some formation there, but it never took. I don't want to place a blame on anyone. I know my pride and lack of desire really played a part in that, but
yeah.
I just was not a well-formed Catholic at all. And, you know, it's funny, as I was kind of falling away from the church in high school, really asking some hard questions that never got great answers.
Mm.
My parents were having more of a solid conversion.
Oh.
My dad had gone to Persia and had just a huge conversion. And even my brother and I could see it in my dad and in my parents. And,
wow.
Yeah, and of course we weren't really excited about it, because all of a sudden they wanted to say the rosary every night and and really trying to make us more accountable for our faith. And you know, we were just older at that time and weren't interested. We even joked with my dad, "Oh my goodness, just whatever you do not become a deacon." And you know, well,
what happened?
You know how the Lord works. Those are famous last words. But anyway, that's just kind of how our faith journey went when I was younger. Just not well formed, mm-hmm. not strong.
Were you hostile to the church, or just did you grow indifferent to it? What were your feelings?
I was definitely indifferent, never hostile.
Yeah.
But I really struggled with the existence of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just swirl around thoughts in my head at night about that. Like, well, if God is real, if that is true, then why? And I think we all have to come to a point in our lives where we wrestle with those really big questions.
Yes.
And I just never even thought about going to my parents to ask that question, or, you know,
yeah,
to help me through that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I when I began going through a period of questioning when I was in my late teens, I never bothered to visit a church or talk to a pastor about it, or a priest, even though I had been raised Catholic. It's just funny sometimes when you begin to your searching, you think that the places you've been can't possibly hold any of the answers you're looking for. We'll talk on the other side. Becky Carter, my guest.
This program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit St. Paul Street Evangelization. St. John Paul II stated that for the disciple of Christ, evangelization is a duty, an obligation of love, and the Catechism of the Catholic Church states that evangelization is necessary for salvation. So we know we're called, but how do we do it? St. Paul Street Evangelization can help.
To learn more, contact us at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Ann Arbor Smiles welcomes Dr. Patrick DiDonato and Dr. Abigail Walker to their team. Patrick is a parishioner of St. Thomas the Apostle in Ann Arbor, and Abigail is a pediatric dentist with openings available without a wait. Learn more about them at AnnArborSmiles.com. The team at Ann Arbor Smiles offers nearly every specialty in two convenient locations, including cosmetic dentistry, braces and Invisalign, and even sleep apnea. Ann Arbor Smiles provides care for the entire family. Visit AnnArborSmiles.com.
Do you ever wonder when it's time to stop talking? I wonder, often at times, if I should stand up and speak up or just walk away. So I turn to Scripture as I pray and discern, what would Jesus say? This becomes more of an issue for me during election years when pro-lifers are constantly accused of being one-issue voters and many close their ears to any talk about abortion. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus tells us, whoever does not receive you nor heed your words as you go out of that house or that city, shake the dust off your feet. I've had those conversations on social media, which is not an ideal platform for these debates. There have been many occasions where I've walked away from the thread. Some people are not interested in truth as much as they are interested in convincing others their narrative is truth. So we evangelize, yes. But when someone just doesn't want to hear truth with a capital T, we walk away and shake the dust off our feet. This has been a Christ Center communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Americans are voting. The two major parties represent very different ways of protecting religious liberty, the preborn, and selecting the judges who should interpret our laws. Much is at stake. Many years ago, I read a book called Shaping History Through Prayer and Fasting, and I learned that our chief opponents on earth are not human beings, but principalities and powers in the heavenly places. Naturally, our weapons of war must include prayer and fasting. Imagine it. God has granted American believers the dignity and opportunity of changing American history through supernatural means. So don't neglect the tools He's given us, and don't let the perfect become the enemy of the good. If you can't pray and fast every day, do so when you can. St. Catherine of Siena said, God can't use what we won't give Him, but He won't despise even our humblest effort. So go out, pray, and vote.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. If you're facing uncertainty with your current health care plan, now is the time to join CMF Curo. You can join any time during the year, and CMF Curo offers flexible Catholic health care solutions for individuals, families, and employers. CMF Curo is your personal health care advocate. Contact them today at mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Becky Carter, talking about her falling away from the Catholic Church, but eventually returning. And I need to ask you, how did you meet Jim?
Oh, now this is Catholic radio, right?
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. He was in the same fraternity as my brother. And we just ran into each other a few times at different events, and it was one of those. We looked back, and it was like the Lord just kept bringing us back together, because he was in a different town. I didn't even go to the same college, and I was just running. I know. It's a whole nother story. It's a great story, but it's a whole nother story.
I'd love to hear it sometime. So you and Jim, obviously, were you at the place in your own spiritual growth and development where you and Jim could actually ask each other, is this God's will for us?
Oh, well, I don't think so. I don't I don't really recall ever using that type of language.
Yeah, okay.
But in a weird way, and we were both pretty rebellious. We weren't really living our faith that we knew we believed in God.
Mm-hmm.
We knew we were people of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew faith was important for marriage.
Yeah.
And so we knew we wanted to be on the same page when it came to faith. And so that's where a lot of his questions would come from.
Yeah.
He grew up in a very small town in South Arkansas where there was one small Catholic church. It was a missionary church. They didn't even have a priest there on a regular basis. Hmm. He just didn't know Catholics.
Yeah.
And so he would look up, you know, back then there was no internet. All we had was the encyclopedia.
Mm-hmm.
So he would look up the Catholic Church. He would hear words like Vicar of Christ, and
right.
that just really was hard for someone who wasn't familiar with the language
sure.
and the faith
sure.
to even understand. So he would ask me, and I don't know. why do you worship Mary? Well, I don't think we worship Mary. Pretty sure about that. You know, why do you do this? Why do you have a pope? And I couldn't answer it. I said, I don't know. We just do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually a great answer now when you understand the faith. We just do. Why?
Right.
Because this is Christ's church.
Yes.
Because this is how he leads us. But anyway, I could not answer his question.
So when you do decide that your relationship is solid and Jim proposes, what did your mom and dad do about this?
Well, I was living out of state, and so I called them. I'm really glad it didn't have to be a face-to-face conversation. I feel like that might have been even more difficult. But in our just lack of knowledge, our decision would be, you know, oh, we just won't get married in a church, and then that'll make it all better. But no, my parents were very upset. By this point, my dad was already in formation to become a deacon. And so he's going deep. And of course, my mother is going through that with him. And so they're having these really deep conversions. They're going deeper into their knowledge and understanding of the church. Their convictions are strong. And here I am. Well, I'm not going to get married in the church. So yes, they were very upset. My father asked me, he said, do you, denounce the Catholic Church? And I genuinely said, I do not even know what that means. And I don't even know if I would have the authority to do that.
Right, right.
So, right? Like that was the level of my culpability.
Yeah,
I
sure.
just didn't know what I was walking away from. And it was hard. It was very hard, very difficult. My father said, I don't even know if I can go to your wedding.
Ouch.
And it wasn't necessarily because he didn't want to go or it was an act of being harsh. It was, as the church teaches, we should not be encouraging
right.
those to commit a mortal sin.
Sure.
Which I was doing, though I didn't really understand. So anyway, his spiritual director was lovely and wonderful, and he said, you go and you do what it takes to keep your family together.
Mm-hmm.
And ever so thankful for that advice, because it did truly keep our family together.
If your parents had decided not to attend your wedding, would that have really created a divide between you that would have been difficult to overcome?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I really do, and it's hard to say that now as a parent and knowing the faith.
Right.
It's hard to say that.
Right.
You know, I don't know how I would address the situation if I were to have to do that
right.
as a parent.
And a lot of it would have to do, too, on your children and the degree of culpability and what they understood
right.
and, you know, these actions I'm taking, how are they going to be understood? I mean, it's...
Exactly.
That's tough. Yeah.
It is tough. I mean, mercy really does win, and that's what my parents always did. Now, through the years, he would start sending us little emails about stories of, you know, some angel appear to some man in a prison cell, and they would come and visit and leave their Magnificat on the table, and I would just, we would roll our eyes, and, you know, they were still always trying to plant the seed.
Yeah, good for them.
And well, praying.
So when did you and Jim begin to take the Christian faith with some seriousness?
Well, really immediately. Once we got married, we had been attending a non-denominational church. And we wanted to become members.
By the way, where were you married? Where were you married?
We were married outside.
Okay.
So
you did not marry in a church building?
We did not.
Okay. I wasn't sure of that. Okay.
And we did not have a deacon or a priest. We did not have anyone else attending, just the Protestant.
Yeah.
Pastor.
Okay.
Of
all right.
Yeah.
So, but you begin
so
to
we
go.
We were civilly union.
Yes. Where do you go? End up going to church then?
So we were at a non-denominational church. It mm-hmm. was a Christian church. So it's kind of. I can't remember who they're connected to.
Is that the Campbellite movement of the 19th century?
I haven't thought about that in a really
sure.
long time, where
okay.
that came from. But it's not the first Christian church, it's just the Christian church.
Yeah.
And they did celebrate communion mm-hmm. every Sunday. They did not accept my infant baptism.
Right. Yeah.
And that became a real big issue. Baptism kind of seems to be the issue in our marriage and with our children and, mm-hmm. and with our church journey, but they would not accept my baptism. And it really hurt me.
Yeah.
I'd always just felt like I was baptized. That was just always part of me.
Yeah.
And then someone to call that into question was very difficult. Anyway, I did end up receiving a believer's baptism. My husband mm-hmm. did the dunking.
Okay.
And it was a beautiful time. I did make a commitment
yes.
with my wife as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to discount it. It was beautiful,
right.
but
yeah.
it just wasn't efficacious.
When do you get to the place where the Catholic Church starts to be on the horizon?
Well, we were married for almost 15 years. Five children, lost one in a miscarriage.
Okay.
So we were very open to life. Contraception was a big part of our struggle in understanding how we are to walk as Christians and live our married life, and never really could get a good solid answer on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just kept having babies through the process. Mm-hmm. But when we were about 14 years in the marriage, we had gone to several different churches. We had gone to the Christian church. We had gone to a Southern Baptist church, back to another non-denominational church. And then we meandered our way through history a little bit and ended up at a Presbyterian church, the PCA, which is a very conservative
right.
branch of the Presbyterian
yeah.
church.
They would have accepted
very
your baptism.
Yes, yeah. yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And we ended up baptizing all of our children there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so the, you know, this pastor, you know, there's something about that denomination that attracts highly educated people. Not that I was a highly educated person, but.
It's heavily doctrinal, though. It is heavily doctrinal. Westminster Confession of Faith,
helpful.
Right? So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really learned a lot. And I look back now, that is, of all my friends, the ones who had the most difficult time with us becoming Catholic were those of that faith.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, they're well-formed.
Yeah. Within that tradition, right. And it's an
yeah,
intensely
and they think
Reformation
right, they're
position.
Yeah.
yeah,
it was that was a very difficult. But I have to chuckle a little bit because it was that church that in the formation we received there, learning scripture, learning history, learning some of these really big words.
Justification, sanctification, yeah, okay.
All of it. Oh, all the arguments about how are we really sanctified.
Right.
This is what we would talk about in our, you know, for pleasure. But that really prepared me to accept the Catholic faith and mm-hmm. to understand the Catholic faith. And so I do giggle a little bit about the irony of that. That the Presbyterian Church really prepared me
to become Catholic,
to receive my faith.
Yeah, glory to God.
That's great. Yeah, amen, right?
Right. So you and your husband, did you both share the same kind of intensity when it comes to doctrinal questions?
I would definitely say that he always had stronger questions and a stronger desire to know truth than I did. I'm the social butterfly.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to church where my friends were,
mm-hmm.
and that was really more important to me than doctrine.
Yeah.
But he's the one who really carried us back into history. He's the one who did all the reading of the early church fathers. He's the one who had genuinely, here's one of those big words, an epistemological crisis.
Right.
And he had a true crisis of faith when we left the Presbyterian Church. Didn't know where to go. There was a little bit of a scandal there, and we weren't going back, but we didn't know where to go. And we ended up at a Southern Baptist church that had a pastor who was Calvinist. But if you know anything about the two faiths, so you have a Southern Baptist Calvinist,
right.
and you have a Presbyterian Calvinist, and the Southern Baptist Calvinist is not going to accept our children's
right.
baptism.
We've got about 30 seconds. We've got about 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, so anyway, my husband said, I think we need to be Catholic. And I said, no, but we went to Mass. And it was, I mean, the Lord, when you open yourself to God's grace, he will flood you. And that is exactly what he did.
Beautiful.
And so on our 15th wedding anniversary, we had our marriage blessed. And
yeah.
My husband was confirmed, and now we're one big happy Catholic family.
Well, Becky, how can people stay in touch with the kind of work you're doing? Is there a website?
I do. I'm on social media, thrivinginthetrenches.com.
Okay.
I haven't really done any podcasts in a year, but you can still catch me over there.
We'll link it at our site. Thank you so much.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
There's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. Companies have temporarily stopped hiring. Sporting events are held without fans. Even your friends are being told to keep their social distance from you. However, at Ave Maria University, we ask you to consider advancing while the world around you recedes. Gaining an online master's degree in business administration or theology can propel you forward, distinguishing you from the competition when companies again start hiring. Apply now at avemaria.edu.
Hi, this is Vanessa Denha-Garmo. Please tune in for my program, Epiphany. We're made to praise God and to celebrate our faith. I want to encourage listeners to connect, collaborate, and communicate with the faith community. Life is a journey, and along the way, we have those epiphany moments that bring us closer to Christ. Please partner with me and celebrate the diversity of our Catholic Church.
Epiphany, Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Good afternoon. Thank you
It was good being with you the last 2 hours. And let me tell you, we got great stuff coming up now. Trent Horn and Mark Brumley on Catholic Answers Live. Mark's going over Greek Catholic books. And then tonight, EWTN, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, Carl Anderson, who heads up the Knights of Columbus, is going to be talking about the founder of the Knights, Father McGivney. Again, from New Haven, Connecticut, my hometown. So make sure you're listening tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, and stay ready for Catholic Answers Live as I go off the air. Lord willing, I'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Crest in the Afternoon. In the meantime, go to AveMariaRadio.net. Go to the website. Take a look at the books that we've mentioned. They're in the online bookstore. Our topics usually have, almost always, have supplementary materials available for you in the Crest of Guest Archives. And our hosts, we have links to their sites, their podcasts, and all that. Lord willing, I'll see you tomorrow.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.